business. And so from there, I've transitioned into a speaker. So I travel the country speaking to businesses, associations, and conferences on issues of money and leadership. So I'm definitely happy to be with you all today.
Well, Chris, we're glad to have you with us, and I think we're going to have a great 45 minutes or an hour here talking about courage and leadership. Our next call will be on December 12th. This year, we're going to skip November so that you all have plenty of time to eat your turkey. And then we'll get back together again on December 12th. And the topic will be leading your culture. But let me turn it over now to our hostess, Mary Fink. Mary?
Thanks, Joe. Courage and leadership is a topic that comes up so often in the courses that we teach and the classes that we have. It is definitely one of those skills that leaders must have. It's not negotiable, although we do find that some leaders don't have it. It requires leaders to take action that's often difficult. But especially in the short term, making short-term decisions that are going to benefit the organization in the long term, and not everyone has their eye on the long term. It has been said that leadership is not for the weak or the timid, that you have to be willing to have courage. And employees want to work for leaders that they trust and leaders who will step up even when that stepping up is hard. So we have chosen, I think, six themes to talk about with regard to leadership and courage. And the first one is just good old, plain old honesty, total honesty, not half-truths or not evading the question. It requires leaders to wrestle with how to say things, but never what to say. So, Joe, in your experience, have you ever had situations where that just was the main thing?
Well, it's being honest and open with everybody. I mean, that's just the way you earn respect and the way you lead and the way people gain respect for you. A couple of thoughts. My predecessor, Tom Hennessy, used to talk all the time about being a no-secrets company. And those words are often very hard for people to say, but we talk about that a lot, being a no-secrets leader, not keeping secrets from your people. If you share with your people, if you're honest with them, they're going to trust you. They're going to respect you. They're going to follow you. They're going to support you. But it's hard. An awful lot of people have a hard time saying, I am a no-secrets leader. But we Tractor Supply function on the basis of being a no-secrets company. Now, obviously, there's certain financial things you can't share. But other than that, let's not keep secrets from people. The more we share, the more input that we get, the more people are going to trust us. And the same goes for yourself personally. Talk about yourself. Let people know who you are and where you're from. The more you open yourself up, again, the more people will respect you, will admire you, will follow you, and will understand you.
I think there's another piece of that, and that is the courage to say, I don't know, when you don't know, rather than making it up on the spot.
Oh, I'll tell you that. That's when you're an employee and the boss is not admitting he doesn't know something, that's an immediate, I mean, if you don't know something, everybody around you knows you don't know it, so don't pretend you don't know it. Just get out there and say, hey, I don't know this, tell me, explain it to me. And people, that's another one of these things where if you're just honest with people, they're going to respect you and admire you. And besides, if you can't kid people about whether you don't know something. If you don't know it, everybody knows you don't know it. So
exactly.
Might as well
exactly.
Just say, I don't know it.
Right. Chris, do you want to chime in on this?
Well, I think, you know, the trust factor that Joe hit on is dead on. I think being honest, the leader's responsibility is to try to gain trust each and every day. And in that leadership role, the way that you handle things, you will either gain trust or lose trust on how things are dealt with. So deal with it openly. And remember, if there is an issue, you want to deal with the issue, not the individual. You want to preserve the individual, but deal with the issue. You want to constantly be building people up.
Exactly.
I would often say, you know, don't ask who's wrong or who caused this thing. Ask what's the issue, what's the problem, let's solve the problem. And then if there's a performance issue involved, we can handle that later in private. So often I've seen leaders in the past who just run in and say, who did this? And that's exactly the wrong thing to say. What's the problem and how are we going to solve it?
Exactly. Let's move on to the second theme, and that is the ability to deliver bad news, sometimes even to good people. There comes a time when we have to give a performance appraisal that's not stellar, or we have to correct somebody. They're on the wrong path, and we want to bring them back onto the right path. And that ability to deliver the bad news, first of all, the ability to do it at all, and secondly, the courage to do it, especially in a timely manner, is so important. It's one of the things we talk about when we have our difficult conversations class. It's about the conversation, but it's also about getting to the point of having it. So, Chris, any thoughts about that?
Well, I think, you know, as a leader, people look up to you. And so when things are going well, it's great. And when things aren't going well, you have to be the person to deal with it. And when it comes upon, like, performance reviews where you're shooting straight with people to let them know about where they land, we want to let the numbers or the performance speak for itself. That's something that they need to take ownership on and really understand what's expected of them. And so the leader must do a great job of doing what I call inspecting what you expect. You don't want to wait until the end of the year to let someone know how they're doing. This is something they should get feedback on weekly, biweekly, or monthly at a minimum on how they're performing. So you have an opportunity to recognize them and encourage them and push them to go further.
And what's the downside of not doing that? I mean, maybe I don't want to have that conversation, and so I just do a mediocre, middle-of-the-road evaluation. Haven't I done a disservice to that person?
Well, not only, Mary, have you done a disservice to that individual, you've done a disservice to the team as well as to the company. I call that sanctioned incompetence from a leader. This is where you're allowing someone just to skate by. Now, there's a difference in someone having a life issue going on and you're giving them grace, as opposed to sanctioned incompetence where they're not able to perform. If someone's not performing on my team, as a leader, I have to look at myself and realize, what have I not done to help them? Have I given them the tools they need? Have I trained them properly? And have I communicated very, very clearly what I expect for them to produce in this role?
Right.
You know, I think what you said about performance reviews is right on target. Let's not wait till the year end to deliver bad news. It should every performance review should be an accumulation of the things that are said during the course of the year. However, there are an awful lot of people. It's human nature. You don't want to deliver bad news. Yet the sooner you deliver it, the easier it is. We have one of our classes is about difficult business conversations, and we spend a full day on it at our retreat. And we work through how to get to the facts and how to get to them early. But the emotional end of it is we want to procrastinate, but that's exactly the wrong thing to do. The earlier you address the issue and the more facts you put into it, the easier it is for you and the more likely you're going to get a good outcome.
And again, Chris, to your point, it's about the behavior. It's not about the person. So if I'm clear about that, it makes it easier for me to say what I need to say and not feel like I'm going to hurt the person.
That's exactly right.
Joe, do you have a story about that?
Well, I have a couple of stories. They're not necessarily good stories, though. They're stories about where I procrastinated when I should not have procrastinated. There are two particular high-level officials in our company going back quite a few years, which were very difficult situations, and instead of getting on the bandwagon early on, I kind of kept coaching and kept working with people and hoping that they would get better, when in fact in my heart I knew that I should have taken action, and I did take action on both of them, but I should have done it much earlier. It's just it's one of those emotional things. You procrastinate about getting to the heart of the matter, but as Chris said before, your whole organization suffers when you allow a square peg to be in a round hole in a leadership role.
It does, and it's not long after you do take action that everyone comes to you and says, what took you so long?
Oh, yeah, I remember on one situation where I let somebody go. I mean, it was like a giant celebration in the company as soon as they found out a certain person was gone. So it's one of those things that we all have to have the courage to get to the issue and get to it early.
Exactly. The third theme is own your own decisions, whether they're successful or not. You know, we're usually pretty good about talking about a decision that we've made when it turns out to be really successful and it moves the company forward. But sometimes we're a little reluctant to want to talk about those bad decisions that we made or that we encouraged that didn't turn out so well. But owning those decisions, it's another way of letting employees know that you can trust them. Chris?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things a leader has to do very early in their career is they have to make a decision. They have to understand, are they going to choose to be popular or are they going to choose to be effective? And once you make that determination, then what you want to do is when you understand, when you choose being effective, then you're going to own decisions, whether they're right, wrong, or indifferent. And I think the more opportunity you have in front of your team to tell them about decisions or directions that were done and where you were human and you made an error, but you fixed it, I think it humanizes you to the team. There's nothing worse than for a leader to always appear to be right or always talk about the things they did well. Talk about the things where you made a mistake, but then vow to your team that your focus is on doing it right and the company comes first and you're going to do whatever it takes to do it the right way.
And those kinds of decisions are often, in the short term, they may not be popular, but they're the long-term decisions, and it's the long-term decisions that really pay off.
You don't always know in the beginning if it's going to be successful or not. So the fact that you would own it all the way through it and see it through is important.
And I think one of the things a leader can do with the team is, you know what, if we're going to try a new direction or we're going to try something, you want to paint the picture for the team of what success will look like, how it's going to take everybody focused to make it successful. And you know what, if it doesn't work, then we're going to regroup, recoup, and we're going to try again, but we're going to always give our all.
I love that.
I'll go back in time a bit with Tractor Supply, but we made a very significant decision in the early 1980s to walk away from our target customer, who was a person in production agriculture, to focus on a hobby farmer. I mean, that took a lot of courage, and we as a leadership team simply shifted direction, much to the concern of many of our people. It turned out to be a good decision in the long run, and one that has in fact made all the difference in the world. It separated us from the pack. And today, Tractor Supply has got, I think, three times more stores than the next five competitors put together as a result of having the courage to make that somewhat unpopular decision 30 years ago.
Thank you. The next theme is sort of turning this a little bit in the other direction, is taking the blame for yourself or others who work for you. If it is a team decision and we've decided to move forward with it and it's horribly unsuccessful, or we meet with disaster or something that we didn't expect and it turns out to be unsuccessful, then really the right thing for the leader to do is accept the responsibility for yourself and your team. And if you think that won't build followership, you'd be mistaken, right?
I have another one of those stories to tell. I think 1999, I allowed us to go live with a brand new computer system in what's called the Big Bang approach, where we switched overnight to a new system. And it was a mess. We were partially paralyzed as a company for quite a while. People were down in the dumps. We couldn't replenish the stores. It was just a terrible situation. But I was accountable, and I made sure everybody know I made that decision. I'm sorry I made that decision. I stuck with people. I brought the pizza in when they needed to, when they were working late, and I stuck by everybody, and we worked together, and we pulled together, and we brought ourselves out of that mess. Eventually, it was interesting that we did not have a single person leave during that process. Instead of getting discouraged and saying I'm going somewhere else, they stuck with it, and we pulled through. And it was a crisis. But they knew that the boss who made the decision was there in the trenches with them while we were fixing it, and it took quite a while to fix.
Right. Chris, what's been your experience with this?
Well, I actually had an example years ago where one of my IT guys made an error, and our computer system went down on the last day of the month. And in the banking world, the last day of the month is a vital day for business. It affects people's paychecks and all these things. And so it was an opportunity in the staff meeting once things got up and going where I let the team know that, you know, this error happened because of my leadership. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? You don't affect the computers. I said, no, but what I did do was allow you all to rush on the end of the month to cram all these deals in when we had 29 days throughout the month to get it done. And I said, so it's a leadership failure to wait to the last minute to try to get something done, and we put ourselves at the mercy of the computer system. I can tell you my IT team grew to respect me a lot more because I took the brunt of it from them, and I was shielding them from all of the anger and the backbiting that was going to happen, and I made the team kind of understand that it was my fault. And I can tell you, we began to be a little bit more unified on that occurrence, and it helped us to grow to set new records down the road.
And that the outcome probably would have been totally different if you had tried to blame the IT department. There would have been very little learning and hardly any growth. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree with you, and I think that's one of the challenges for a leader is that you have to look at things and understand, you know, I can't control every outcome, but what out of this can I use to teach the team and grow myself as a leader? And those opportunities are around us all day, every day. We just have to be aware of them, capitalize on them, and then communicate very clearly with the team. Those teaching opportunities are huge for the growth of the team in the long run.
Absolutely. Our next theme is face the brutal facts yourself. As Joe said, we had our last session with one of our classes yesterday, and one of the things we do during that last session is have a group discussion on the book Good to Great. And we had very good conversation around the topic of confronting the brutal facts and how sometimes it's something that's staring you in the face. It's not it's not something you've done. It may just be circumstances. And because of the negativity of it, we just sometimes don't, we want to pretend we don't know it or pretend we don't notice it or pretend it's not really happening. But if we're going to be that leader, we have to be on the lookout for those and facing them and, in fact, soliciting that information ahead of time so we can get in, so we can get ahead of it rather than behind it. Joe?
Speaking of brutal facts, quite a number of years ago in the 90s, Walmart opened a farm store. And that, of course, was terrifying to us as a little company. And, of course, the rumors were flying around that they're going to open 100 stores or 1,000 stores or something like that. And we could have crawled under our rock and hoped things went away. But we took a different approach. I called David Glass, who was the CEO of Walmart, and I said, hey, I'd like to come down and talk to you about your farm store business. And I did. And he was gracious, and we had a grand conversation and talked about their experiment in the farm store business. And he was very honest with me. He said, well, Joe, we're just going to try, you know, we're going to try and sell some products and see what we can figure out that we can take out of the farm store channel and put it into the Sam's Club. That was his objective. He was trying to figure out what products he could sell enough of to put into a Sam's Club. And so we carried on a conversation, you know, for an hour or so, and then I stayed in touch with him, and about 8 months later I called him. I said, I know, because I'd visited the store, I said, I know your store's not doing very well, and you got some really, really rough inventory in there, and you're never going to be able to unload it for even a half of cost, but I can. So I tell you what I'll do. I'll take the inventory off your hands at cost, and I'll give you a lease on half of that building for the next 10 years. And you know what? It's exactly what they did. We took the inventory off their hands. We reopened it as a Tractor Supply store, and it still is today. But we had the courage to stand up and do something rather than just look the other way.
That's a great story. And that was going and looking for the truth rather than waiting for it to come to you. Chris, do you have any examples of when it's been tough for you, but you've done it anyway and it turned out okay?
Well, I mean, when I can remember as I took over one of the brokerage firms that I was working for, and I got there, and they had three team members. And the honesty was is that of the three, none of them were good salespeople. And I can remember sitting down with them, and I realized that I needed to let them know where we were and where we're going. And I kind of talked to them about their performance and where they were together, and I said, listen, collectively, this office has not done well. But here's the deal. I don't care about what happened in the past. What we're going to do is now look forward to the future, and we're going to begin to do the things that winning looks like each and every day. And I said, so I want you to let go of the past, and we're going to move forward. And it required some very upfront conversations with people and holding people's feet to the fire, but it was one of those things where instead of me having to let all three of them go to start anew, I was actually able to salvage three people. But I had to be honest with myself to realize these people are not where they need to be to get me where where I want to go, so what can I do to help them get there? And so I took it as an opportunity instead of an excuse, and it worked out well.
That's a great story, and I love the fact that it was your responsibility, not just you telling them this isn't working, y'all figure it out. You helped them figure it out, and you all did it together.
It was really helpful, and I asked them to actually write down what can they do to improve. You know, once we gained an understanding of how much they wanted to make, because in a commission type of world, they control their income, so I helped them to understand that. And I said, what do you need to do better to get to this dollar amount? Because I know you want to provide for your family. I know you want to do some things. So what would you need to do? How would you coach yourself? And it was really neat for me to sit back as a leader and have them tell me what they knew they needed to do. And so I was able to confirm what they were talking about, and I said, you know what, and I'm going to help you do that. I said, so be willing to be coached and be willing to be pushed, be willing to be uncomfortable to be successful in the end. And I had them sign something saying they were agreeing to be coachable. They shook my hand, they looked me in the eye, and we began to work.
That is an awesome story. Everybody was facing the brutal facts right there.
Yes, it was, and I look back on that. That was a growth opportunity for me as a leader, and it came from reading. You know, leaders have to be readers, and so I was constantly trying to grow myself, and I was very, very grateful for this book that was published back in the 60s.
Excellent. Excellent.
That's a great point about reading. Some people are voracious readers and some are not, but a great deal of your education and a great deal of your learning in terms of leadership can come from books. It was an inspirational book back in the early 80s called In Search of Excellence that changed my outlook on business. And quite frankly, Tractor Supply probably wouldn't be where it is today if I hadn't read that book. So got to stay informed and you've got to keep learning.
Absolutely.
So we've talked about honesty and all these pieces of honesty, delivering bad news, taking blame, confronting the facts, and they're all kind of active things. I want to throw a passive thing in there, and that is when someone else brings you something that's really hard to confront, and it's often that someone brings you news that you don't want to hear. Our inclination is to want to deny it or confront it or disagree with it, but often they're very right. And the hard part, the part of that I think that requires courage, is encouraging as many people as possible to bring you that bad news, to always be looking for people that will tell you the truth.
What I used to say to the executives who worked for me, I just was very clear with them. I said, you've got an obligation on every significant issue to speak up and tell me what's on your mind. And if you speak up and I go off and make a harebrained decision, the monkey's on my back. But if you allow me to make a harebrained decision and you had the opportunity to speak up about something important that did not, the monkey's on your back. But as a matter of fact, you're simply not going to work for me. You've got to have people working for you that speak up. You got to hear them. You got to listen to them because, you know, you only got one brain. And if you've got half a dozen people working for you, that's seven times the power that you got. So you got to encourage people to speak up. Now, when people speak up and tell you what you don't want to hear, don't argue with them. You say thank you and digest what they've said. And you know that you may not agree with them, but if you argue with people, they're going to cease bringing information to you, and then you're beginning to isolate yourself. So be open, listen, and say thank you.
And the higher up you go in the organization, the harder it is for you to find people that are willing to come with you with the honest truth.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. But if you're receptive and people, you got a reputation for being receptive to hearing the truth, that happens. I remember one situation where I was having significant difficulty in the company, and I had particular respect and trust for one of our regional managers, and I just wasn't sure I was getting a straight scoop on a lot of stuff. So I got in a plane, flew out, and spent 2 days with this particular fellow. Who'll go remain nameless for now, but I just respected him. He had a great deal of information. He told me what I instinctively knew but couldn't see. and it just sort of solidified what I in my heart knew was the case.
Those people are the treasures in the organization. Chris?
Well, I think the main thing is when someone brings you something that is, you know, bad news or something you don't want to hear, one of the golden rules I think always holds true, and that is never kill the messenger.
Exactly.
Never, ever kill the messenger, because once you do that a couple times, you will cut off communication. And then that will lead to being alienated, really, from the team. Whenever people brought me information that was not particularly happy or good, I went through a three-step process that I'd love to share with the callers. The first step I'd love to do is just to understand the situation. And then step two is I'm going to ask for more information. So I'm going to do some research and try to find out, is this valid or not? And so step three is I'm going to deal with the obligation. The obligation of a leader is it has to be dealt with the good of the company. It's not a matter of someone being comfortable or you shielding someone, but the obligation is to the company. And so we have to make decisions based on that. So again, the three steps are understand the situation, ask for information, and then the third thing is deal with the obligation.
Great advice. Really great advice.
One of the things that I see from time to time is CEOs will get to the point of shutting off communication and just not listening. And I like to say that when you see a CEO spending 90% of their time in their office, it's the time to sell the stock. You know, you need to get out there and get engaged and be open to listening to people. And it starts right at the top.
Joe, I agree with you. We use the phrase that if you're shut in, then absolutely nothing can get in. And that's good or bad. And so you're left to your own devices, which can be dangerous at times.
And that's great, too. That's a great point. That segues us to our last theme, and that is know when to leave. You were saying, you know, if he's in the office 90% of the time, maybe it's time for him to leave or her to leave.
Well, that's very difficult for most people. They want to hang on and hang on, but when you get up there in age, and you got to recognize when you cease to be the kind of leader that people want, when you cease to listen, when you think you know all the answers. There are times in which you need to say adios. I've had a wonderful career. It's time to move on.
And sometimes it isn't even age. It's just things have changed. And it's time to move on to something else. Somebody else. It's time for someone else to take the reins.
Well, I've seen many situations where, in different roles in business, not necessarily the most senior roles, that businesses just grow beyond you. You know, you can do great when you're running a store doing $2 million a year, but when the business grows to the point where the store is doing $8 million a year, you know, that's a different role, and you may not be qualified for that. It may not be suitable for that.
Which brings up another kind of courage, and that is someone who may take on a job that they thought they were ready for or they thought they were up to and they're not, and they come back later and say, this isn't what I thought it was, or I'm not equipped to handle it, let's make a change. And I've had that happen to me twice in my career with people coming to me and saying, I wasn't ready for this, I'd like to step down. That's real courage as well.
It is, and what I've found experientially here is that people who come to you and say, I want to step down, will do great in a lower role. People who you have to step down almost always fail.
Right.
Another story about what I think is courage in business that not many other that I know of will follow, and that's what was sharing information with your business partners. At Tractor Supply, we had a supplier conference every year, a vendor conference, and we invited in our top 200 suppliers, and we shared with them almost everything, where we're going to put new stores, how big we're going to grow, what's important to us, and built a tremendous relationship. And I remember what some of the words I would always say, is, and they're still being said today, is make us your test kitchen for new products. Well, that creates a tremendous bond with the supplier, and all of a sudden they're testing products in our stores that they're not testing in other stores, which gives us a leg up on getting new product before other people and understanding what the market wants. So sharing internal, I'm not sure the word is secrets or not, but internal strategies and values and whatnot with the people who are your business partners can in many circumstances prove to be a tremendous competitive advantage for you, a tremendous operational advantage.
Exactly. Chris, any closing comments? before we ask for questions?
No. I just think, you know, as we hit on all these areas, we understand that being in a leadership role is a great deal of responsibility, but it's also a great deal of opportunity. And so you just want to embrace these things, and I would encourage every leader out there to have a mentor or have somebody that you can talk honestly to so you don't feel like you're on an island. When you feel like you're on an island, then you don't allow people to support you and encourage you in times when you need it. And so I would encourage all of the listeners out there and the people on the call to make sure you have somebody you can talk openly with, honestly with, and get some leadership feedback. It'll do you well in the long run.
That's a great point, Chris. And a lot of people, particularly younger people, are reluctant to ask for that kind of help. But you'd be amazed at how many senior people, if you just simply say, gee, I need somebody to bounce some ideas off, or can you give me some advice? Most people at my level are thrilled to do that and are honored that you would ask them. So don't be shy about asking for assistance, asking for advice, asking for help.
Yes, sir.
Great advice and a great conversation. I want to say a couple of other things. One, I encourage you to go back to your staff and have a conversation about this call today, about courage and leadership and about speaking up and honesty and owning your own decisions. It's a great launch for a staff conversation. And it makes it become part of your culture. It's just sort of how we do our business here. So I think it's a great place to start. The second thing I want to say is one of the best books that I've read on the topic is called Management Courage, Having the Heart of a Lion, and it's by Margaret Morford. Margaret is someone who teaches in some of our classes, and she has written this book. Very simple, short, easy to read, but great information in there. And if you're interested in knowing more about the book, you can go to our website and get that.
Yes. Okay, start thinking now about the questions you want to ask. And I've got a few more things to say before we open it up there. One of the things you might think about is I have this advice that I got from my predecessor. You know, he made the point that when things are not going well is when you need to speak up. Human nature, again, is that when we're in trouble, when our job is not going well, is to go hide one way or another, stay out of the communications loop. But you need to do the opposite. You need to be proactive. When things are not going well is when you need to speak up the most. Anyway.
Excellent advice. I'm going to unmute everyone now.
No.
You press *7. If you have a question, I'm sorry, I'm not technically qualified here. You press *7 if you have a question and let us know what you want to know further.
What questions do you have? We will give a prize of a free pumpkin to the first person to ask a question. Okay, two pumpkins.
Hey, Joe, it's Butch.
Hi,
could you elaborate a little bit when you say when things are not going well, now is the time to speak up the most? Do you mean speaking down the chain, speaking up the chain, or speaking across the chain?
All three, but particularly with your boss. Your boss controls your destiny in terms of employment. And if things are, you know, if you're missing your numbers, don't go hide in the back room. You know, figure out what you're going to do to get to your numbers and get to your boss and say, listen, boss, here's my strategic plan, and here's how we're going to get back on track, or I need some help getting back on track. So just I've seen people that you know, that they're in trouble, so what they're doing, instead of talking to their boss who can give them the most help, they tend to go the other direction. So, but in general, you know, when things are going great, you can go lay on the beach an extra couple of days and nobody cares. But when things are not going well, that you've got to get very engaged.
Right, exactly. Okay, thanks.
Your numbers are doing well, though, Butch, so you don't have to worry about that right now.
Yeah, right.
What other questions?
Well, you must all have lots of courage. There are 75 of you on the line. Speak up. The call is free. The advice is free.
This is Brad Cowart. I have a question about managing small teams. We have three people, So every decision is even more magnified. What can you say about managing small teams?
I don't think the principles are terribly different. The communication may be different. You may take them more into your confidence than you might a team of a dozen. But I think the principles are pretty much the same. Communicate clearly, effectively, listen, and then make the decision that you need to make for the benefit of the organization. Now, if you think that your decisions might not be received the way you would like, you may want to chat with your mentor or your friend or your boss or your spouse or somebody else about how to communicate things most effectively. There are ways to communicate unpopular decisions in constructive ways and not so constructive ways. So if you're unclear about that, get some help. There are a lot of people around that can help on that topic. But you can't avoid the tough decisions. If a decision's got to be made that's unpopular, you got to do it.
Chris, do you have anything to add?
I would say with a small team, too, Joe is absolutely right. There's a tendency there where it just because you are closer to them and there's fewer people, there can be a tendency to want to over-communicate. And I would say that you want to make sure that you're communicating the facts, communicating the expectations, but then people need to work. You know, people need to go do things. And so in small groups, it's easier for people to get distracted. So you would want to have kind of clear expectations and really talk about the results. Celebrate the positives, you know, the things that are going on. And you can have more frequent meetings in shorter durations.
Okay.
Did you have more?
Well, we tried this, and we lost a key staff member because they got scared of the true talk of what was happening with the company. Now, maybe that's just the price you pay, and we get another better person in here, but when you lose a third of your staff, that impacts a small team.
I'm not quite sure I understand. Why did you lose the one person?
I guess they couldn't handle the truth. I mean, not everything was super great rosy, and, you know, I laid out this is what we are going to do, but it's going to be rough for a little while. Here's the plan, and they didn't want to stick with the plan. You know,
well,
a team of 200, if one or two people leave, you can handle. But a team of three, when one leaves, it's bigger.
Well, it's no doubt it's a third of your team instead of 5% or 10% of the team, but that, I mean, you can't, if you you make a decision, you got to, if it's the right decision and it's what you got to do, it's what you got to do. And if that person doesn't want to stick with the team, there's really not much you can do about that.
There isn't. And frankly, you might be better off because if you have someone on your team that isn't in step with the rest of you about talking about things and facing the truth, then it could be a problem down the road.
Right.
And one thing I'd interject with that, too, is, you know, with a smaller staff, you want to make sure you bring them all together and the announcement is made by you. You're clearly laying out the details that this person has decided to go a different direction. And then, you know, with a smaller group like that, meet with the other two and sit with them one-on-one and get their thoughts, get their feelings on it so they're communicating to you and not amongst each other. And then I would say you'd want to make sure in hiring the next person that it's imperative that you get the right person on the bus in the right seat.
Yes, I agree. Thank you.
Thanks. What other questions? *7 for the questions.
Hey, Joe, I got another one for you. We're talking about owning your decisions. We talked about how to own our decisions with our own teams, but sometimes we make decisions or the company mandates we make decisions and policies that are not always popular with the customers, i.e. new regulatory things, security, insurance. And in my case, sometimes these price increases are mandated. Would you care to elaborate on that? How do you deal with that?
Well, I just, you know, if the price goes up, the price goes up. That's a function of the marketplace. And in your case, it's probably fuel prices you're talking about. I mean, you can't do anything. You know, you can send them over to to the Middle East to shoot the people raising the prices. But
right.
I just have to be honest with people. You know, the costs are going up because the costs are going up, and if your company imposes something on you, not the price of fuel, but other things, your company, if you don't understand why the company's imposing some rules or regulations or plans on you, you should be able to speak up and ask, I would hope you'd all be working for companies that could explain why they're doing things. You don't have to agree with them, but when you understand the why behind things, it becomes much more acceptable to the rank and file.
Also, if it truly is out of your control, then I think you just share that and tell as much as you know. But there are things that are truly beyond people's control, and I think you just have to accept that.
But you should never say anything bad about your company. Don't go back and say, "Oh, these idiots in the main office made me do something." That doesn't sit well with anybody.
No. Mm-mm.
Hi, this is Tom Kay in Kentucky. Got a question. In the process of management, can you expound a little bit on the use of mentorship to be a mentor to many of your staff?
Chris, you want to take this one first?
Sure. I think that the area of mentorship is twofold. You've got one for the leader, and so this is really where you want to find another leader that maybe is either on your level or above you that can serve to kind of build you up. So for you to be able to talk honestly with about your concerns or to celebrate your goals, and because someone that can push and stretch you to go further. I think within the office that it's always a great idea if you have a more seasoned member on your staff or a senior member on your staff to really plug in a newer hire or a younger person and really begin to build each other up. What I found when I matched people together when I was in the banking world, the more seasoned person enjoyed the opportunity to have this younger person that wanted to learn and wanted to listen, so they were deemed as valuable. The younger person loved the opportunity to ask some of the questions that maybe at that point in time they weren't comfortable asking me. And so it really served all the way around to serve us well, and it was all about building up people and then leading the company.
Mentoring is sometimes easier said than done. Some people like to do it. Some people don't like to do it. Try to get into situations where you have a comfortable relationship, particularly when the senior person really wants to mentor, and try to create an agenda for the things that you really need to talk about. We need to talk about communication skills, or we need to talk about the selection of people, or we need to talk about performance evaluation. So rather than just have a general discussion on management or leadership, that you have some specific topics to talk about. Most senior leaders are honored that you would ask for their help. A few are not, but most are. Does that answer your question, Tom?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the call.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am. Who is this?
This is Sharon Caldwell with Fifth Third.
Hi, Sharon.
I am interested in knowing, when you find out you've got somebody in the wrong seat on the bus and they're not performing optimally, what do you do if you know they are could be a peak performer, but you're not sure what to do with them in your organization?
I think one of the first things you should do is really talk with that individual at depth. Talk about their skill set. Talk about, you know, what their desires are and what they want to be doing. And I think once you extract that information, then you can kind of look at what are the other available positions that are there within the company that are currently open right now and what may be coming open at some point. And so I think it's healthy to do it that way and in that manner, because you're not promising them anything, but just trying to understand where they are. And if they are able to perform, I think, in the capacity they're in right now, and if they are, then we've got to, boom, begin to train and step up. And if they're not, then we either have to find another seat on the bus, or they may have to go do something else.
I would say that's excellent advice, and it's it's very frustrating if you have somebody who has the skills and is not performing, and it's a little difficult to figure out why sometimes. But Chris is exactly right. Just ask the questions and share with them and say, you know, I know that you, my instincts tell me you have the ability to really be a star here, and I want to help you be a star. But if you don't get to that point sooner or later, you're going to have to pull a trigger and make some changes. Does that answer your question, Sean? Karen?
It starts. It starts the answer anyway.
Well, you could join our leadership program and get 18 days worth of learning how to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other question?
Star 7. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Cheryl O'Quinn. I have a question. I want to say leaders are certainly tested during periods of change in a company. Do you have any advice for leading courageously when the ground is literally shifting up under your team members' feet? How do you get them to really let go of the past and be willing to embrace the future when you're uncertain of what the future will hold yourself?
Well, that's a tough situation. Those things like that typically happen in the cases of mergers and acquisitions or management changes at the top. It's a matter of trying to be as stable and as honest as you can be. Don't keep secrets. You know, just share that you know, if you're also in the same situation, just share that you're in the same situation. And honesty is the best policy in situations like that. And maybe you can get more information from the management of your company, or maybe you can't. But good flow of information and honesty are the most important things. I remember a situation where we were going to be closing a distribution center, and the rumors were flying around about the closing, and everybody's upset, and nobody's working, and it just, the morale was terrible. Once we went in and said, okay, we're closing on January 1st, if you stick around till December 29th, we're going to get so many weeks severance pay and so much continuation of your health insurance and blah, blah, blah. Once we said that, productivity went back to 100%, went back to even better than before. And everybody was happy. It was about being honest and thorough with them. So as soon as you can get to that point, you need to get there.
I would agree with you, Joe, and say that being accessible and visible as a leader is really important. I think you've already hit on that during times of change. And the other thing is to let people know that it's okay to feel whatever they're feeling. Every emotion is valid. Every behavior, as we know, isn't. But every feeling is valid, and sometimes just a matter of having an opportunity to say what they think without retribution it goes a long way toward having people feel comfortable. They have to get their heads around it, as do you, before they can help the company move forward. And one of the ways we do that is to let people say what they think in a safe place. And then we leave that meeting and we take on the company face. But an opportunity to be completely open, both up and down the line, is really important.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the call, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Next question. Star 7. We're out of pumpkins.
Hello?
We hear a sound on the... Okay, I think we're just going to call it a day here. So, folks, thank you very much for joining us. There's a replay of this on the website you can get to. Our next call will be December 12th, and we'll be talking about culture at the time, leading your culture. And we appreciate you joining us today. Hope you're getting a lot out of these calls, and we plan to do them on a pretty regular basis in the future. And if you have suggestions about topics you would like, please let us know. We want to thank Chris Hogan And Chris, thank you for joining us, and hope to get to see you sometime soon.
Thank you, sir. It was an absolute pleasure to be with you all today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.